Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
You'll find out that it was unfulfilling. You'll find out that I was right. That's why the beauty of wisdom is so great, is you can try to hit your head against sheetrock, or you could just listen to the advice.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Hello, Best Ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Ash Patel, and I'm with today's guest, Andrew McNair. Andrew is joining us from Pensacola, Florida. He is the president and founder of Swan Capital, where his goal is to help families not spend their retirement worrying about money and help families sleep well at night. And that is what Swan Capital stands for. Andrew's portfolio consists of multifamily, RV parks, storage, short-term rentals, and industrial. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. And how are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to be on the show today.
It's our pleasure to have you. Andrew, if you would, can you share with the Best Ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Absolutely. So a few years ago, we had a dream of starting the Cygnet Fund. So Cygnet, C-Y-G-N-E-T, baby swan. My background was in multifamily, duplexes, triplex, and quadplexes. So I started accruing houses, and I thought I wanted to get up to 200 houses. And the problem was I started losing my hair. Now, I don't know if those are correlated, but that's what happened. So I thought, if I get up to 200 houses, by the time I hit 54, the stress of managing the property managers, having people actually burn my house down intentionally, accidentally burning my house down, all of those true stories. And I thought, I don't think I could do it. So that's when I said, my clients who I'm giving advice to buy assets under management in equities, to invest in fixed investments, they need to have real estate a part of their portfolio too. So that's why we went and built our own private equity fund that invests in all those asset classes you just talked about.
On the road to 200 houses, that could be a book title.
Yeah, fired by 25 on my Everyday Philanthropist YouTube channel. I talk about at 25, I had over 25 houses, never had to work again, but I wanted to keep on growing and seeing how large I could grow this portfolio.
What did that transition look like when you decided I'm no longer doing single family houses? What did you start buying and how did you buy them?
When I started selling, I've actually unloaded most of those 54 houses now. So when we went to build Signet, I wanted to think very methodically about our buy box. So our buy box consists of Midwest properties, Southwest, and West Coast friendly states to owners. And we want to invest in things like short-term rentals / RV parks. We want to be invested in multifamily storage units and flex industrial, just because our client avatar is invested as a retiree for income. So if we invest in real estate that produces cash flow versus maybe cannabis farms that don't always produce cash flow, that's why I picked those areas to invest in for our clients.
Do you source the deals and take them down, or do you partner with syndicators?
We partner with syndicators. So we have some operators that we have really enjoyed doing business with. And we have a lengthy 2-page due diligence questionnaire that Lucas, my portfolio manager in my office, runs through. So we want to be very thorough and we want to see their track record. We want to see their business plan. I want to see people saying, I just didn't start this a year ago. I want to see your track record where you've not only had a business plan, you had an IRR, but here's your underwritten IRR versus what your actual IRR is. We do a background check. We pay thoroughly for that to do a good background check. So you got to do that due diligence, especially when you're an RIA like myself, where you want to make sure that you're protecting your clients as best as possible.
What is an RIA?
A registered investment advisor. A lot of people refer to themselves as financial advisors. I have what's called a total wealth management firm. So we have an estate planning attorney, a CPA. And I've always believed that you should have truly comprehensive planning. You should have an attorney and a CPA in your corner. But when you're an RIA like myself, and we're giving advice to clients that they should be invested in our SWAN ETF portfolios that are invested in the stock market, when I go and speak to them about real estate, I need to make sure that they're accredited, they're a qualified client, but also that it fits their investment objectives. If you're not an RIA, you may not be held to such a high accountability. You're not operating always at a fiduciary standard. So as a fiduciary, I have to always put their best interests above my own, even if I was not a nice guy.
Andrew, I've interviewed a number of financial planners, financial analysts who used to be in this industry, placing their clients' money mostly in equities. They have left to start investing in real estate, or they're still in the industry, but they invest their personal funds in real estate. I've often asked the question, if you believe in real estate so much, you put your own money in real estate, why don't you put your clients' money in real estate as well? And most of them will be honest and say, because I can't get a kickback, I can't get paid for placing my clients' money in some of these syndications, because you know the rules, you can't make money for bringing capital. But for you, you guys have your own fund. So you're allowed to put your clients' money in a fund and essentially give your clients exposure to real estate. Is that how that works?
Absolutely. I believe that you should practice what you preach. Again, I've built most of my net worth through real estate, but of course I do have a Roth IRA that I maximize for me and my wife. I do have a Roth 401k that I maximize. And I do believe that all of your assets shouldn't be in real estate. I know that's controversial, but I'll get in any room at any time in any ring talking about true diversification means you need to have some safe investments. You need to have investments in the stock market because every decade is cyclical. Every asset class will have its heyday and then it'll have a famine. So true good financial planning and personal financial planning involves diversification. And it's a shame when people say, I'm a financial advisor, and just because I don't get a kickback, I'm not even going to talk about an entire asset class that has minted more millionaires than nearly any other asset class. I think that wouldn't be prudent, wise, and I wouldn't say it's unethical. We're only restricted to what we can offer. So if I work for a big brokerage house, they may not allow me to offer that. So that's why many years ago, I went out and became my own RIA so that I would have my own compliance. I would have my own rules to abide by according to the SEC. And that's a lot of work. So I totally respect those advisors that they don't want to go through all the hassle of doing that, but they are limiting their clients. And as long as they work with maybe a syndicator, or if they work and have maybe a real estate fund set aside in their financial plan, they're still providing really good financial advice for their clients. But if you don't allocate some towards real estate, 10 to 20% of your portfolio, I don't think that's true diversification, in my opinion.
Andrew, your client success in this fund hinges on your ability to do adequate due diligence. What are some factors that most syndicators don't see and it gets them kicked out of your DD bucket?
What can you do? What I'm about to say, how do you fix this? But some people just have short track records. They want to be raising large sums of money, but they haven't proven themselves. And they're asking for me to write $1 million to $5 million of clients' funds that I take very careful, sacred attention to that, because this is all of their money potentially they've worked a lifetime to accrue. And this person's 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they were a medical salesperson. It's like, no, I'm sorry, but we're not going to give you institutional money until you've proven yourself. So you're going to have to work through your network, friends and family, to build up a track record. The second is just making sure that you've built out your processes and client communication. There's some firms that are best in class. They're constantly having open books and they say, here's the Chase credit card on that property that we just purchased. You can see all of the books. We're going to give you an executive summary. We're going to show you the good parts of the plan, but we're also going to show you the bad parts of the plan, some of the unknowns of the plan that we haven't figured out yet. And that's full transparency. And somebody times we think that they want to see us as the operator with our big chest out that we have all the answers. A lot of times, some investments, you don't have all the answers. So I would say that people are not shining a light on the cons of the deal. And number one is track record. So those are the two that come to mind immediately.
Do you have a preference in a particular asset class, or do you just look for high returns, safe margins? What is the driving factor to get you to invest with a syndicator?
I think it's making sure that we have some experience in those markets. That's one of the things. I'm relying on the person that lives and breathes that market. And it is kind of worrisome when someone is so scattered all over the country, but they have no experience. I know in the hometown of Pensacola, Florida, I know what streets you probably wouldn't want to build on, and maybe ones you would want to build on 10 years from now, but not today. And if you're from out of town, like, you can use the demographic studies, you can use CoStar, you can use some of these resources. But at the end of the day, you also need to have boots on the ground that have went into that market, have surveyed the market, saw the employers firsthand, talked with the local citizens, know where each neighborhood is headed. Without that, you might be flying as blind as the investor that's giving you the money. So I think that's scary for me as the institutional investor coming to invest capital.
There's been an epic rise in the Sunbelt states. There was a heyday where we made a lot of money, and now things are a bit of a reckoning going on. Have you had exposure to any multifamily or any deals that are not going so well?
Again, I'm sure it will happen. When you're buying 35, 40 different properties, you're going to have some that don't work out as planned. That's why diversification, it's age old for a reason. I keep on saying it because it works. I know some of those deals are not going to work out. Luckily, we haven't been getting any capital calls yet, but I'm sure that it will happen. There's some distributions that have been paused, and that's also to be expected when some of their underwriting was a little too hopeful and optimistic. And that's where I will tell you, if a operator has not had contingencies in the business plan, what's the likelihood as me as the investor that is looking over all of my clients' funds to invest a second time around? And here they are coming back asking about the next deal, asking for the next check, and they haven't fulfilled their promises. They haven't followed their own business plan on the first deal. So I think it's really important. So many times we want to grow. We want to do how much many doors that I have under management, how much assets under management I have under portfolio. I love the Chick-fil-A founder's quote. I'm either going to give David Green from Hobby Lobby or Chick-fil-A the credit for this, is he says, we're not trying to get bigger, we're trying to get better. And if you grow your business focused on getting better over time, that is a great business that will probably grow bigger based on osmosis. The clients are going to ask to invest more. You don't have to keep on raising and aggressively trying to push the raise because you have the track record and you've fulfilled the promises that you made. So I would encourage you, don't be short-sighted. Do what you say you're going to do on time when you say you're going to do it, and the referrals will come. The additional checks will come if you do that.
Your investors' exposure, I'm assuming, is limited because they're not investing in individual deals. They're investing in a fund, which is a multitude of deals. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the deals that you have paused distributions on, investors aren't disproportionately getting hurt on that. It's mixed with a pool of other investments that are doing well. On those deals where you have paused distributions, what could you have done differently to have seen this coming or to have asked better questions?
I think it's really important for us who's doing the due diligence on these operators is asking the tough question is, what do you not see? What do you think you don't have a full grasp of? What could go wrong in this plan? What could go wrong with the renovations? What could go wrong with purchasing this property? Is there any unknowns that are out there? And if someone just easy answer, no, there isn't, as a pause, that I need to step back and say, that person answered way too quickly to be so confident that they're going to purchase a $25 million property and they don't have any unknowns. That's unrealistic. Anytime I bought a quadplex, I knew that you never knew what was behind door number three could be some issues. And you have to factor that into the renovation plan that there's some unknowns.
Do you ask them about their past failures?
We didn't at first, and we're doing a lot better at that. But we could definitely do better saying, what didn't go right? Don't tell me about your successes. Tell me about your failures.
What if somebody says, I've never lost money on a deal?
Like my mom always said, if you live long enough, it'll happen to you. So for someone that says that, they either haven't lived long enough or they're lying. That's the only two options, because I have had failures in my own life. I've made failures with my investments. So someone that tries to hide from their failures is sadly missing out on future success.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, when they start out, they have great success. And the problem with that is it can go to their head a little bit and they assume everything they touch turns to gold. And they can get a little bit careless. So we all, I think, need to get our knees chopped out at some point to learn those hard lessons and be a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, I think you go back to, who are you serving? If we go back to say, I'm serving an actual family, who's my end consumer? Sometimes it is a retiree that is relying on a part of their overall retirement income. And if I make a mistake, yes, it'll look bad. It'll affect my future raises. I might have to do capital calls. That'll be embarrassing. But if we actually take the weight of the responsibility of those who are investing with us, then you will spend extra time in the due diligence. You will spend extra time at the negotiation table. And that's why it's so important for GPs to put their money where their mouth is and put their money in there. I got $1.8 million of my own money in Signet. If things don't work out, I lose money. And that's how it should be. And that's where I think, sadly, in the financial advisor space, as well as in many different investment classes, people just don't practice what they preach. They don't have a lot at stake. So if it doesn't work out, they forget. They use things like, those are leads, those are investors. And I always like to say, no, these are families. So in our office, we try not to call them A investors, B investors, or C investors. No, these are families at the end of the day.
Do your investors have a return expectation?
Oh, absolutely. As dealing with retirees day in and day out, their expectations are typically a lot lower than someone in their 30s and 40s, of course. But absolutely, who doesn't want to stay 1, 2, 3, 4 points minimally above inflation? And I think that's where expectations are, is a lot of clients are concerned about inflation because of the result of the last 3 years of this compounded inflation that's affecting them at the grocery store. So of course, expected returns above inflation or minimum expectation.
Yeah. So a few points above what they're getting in their current savings account.
Ideally, minimally that.
Yeah. You have a fair amount of competition from capital raisers where they don't have to pass an exam. They don't have to be registered with the SEC. What are your thoughts on that? Because anybody can become a capital raiser.
Yeah, it's above my pay grade if that should change or if that should stay that way. That's a whole nother podcast. My belief is even if you don't have a license, you should consider yourself as a fiduciary. Anytime you're dealing with other people's money, you're being a steward of their money. And you should take that responsibility very seriously. And you may just move on and you say, I was a capital raiser for a little while and then I got a different business or a different job. But these people live with those consequences. So don't be a part of the problem. There's plenty of Ponzi schemes and bad investments that went belly up. And I hear those stories. So you don't want that's your legacy. At the end of the day, the impression that we leave on our life is going to be our legacy. So I would just tell you, if you're not licensed, that's okay. Just act better and actually hold yourself to a higher standard than those people that are licensed, and you'll never have a problem. Because if someone ever does add licensing requirements to what you do, that's okay because you're already doing that. When people said, are you a fiduciary? I was like, we're a fiduciary before it was popular. We were acting as a fiduciary before it was required because it's common sense. As Zig Ziglar said, you just help enough people get what they want in life and you'll have everything you want in life.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
Andrew, are the majority of your clientele elderly folks?
Yeah, the average client is probably 65. So in that age range, plus or minus 5 years, usually 5 years out from retirement. So anytime I'm on a radio show, I'm saying if you're 5 years out from retirement, you're 5 years in retirement. Hopefully they've heard of Swan Capital, of helping them sleep well at night here in the Gulf Coast area.
The marketing towards elderly folks has got to be completely different than the email blasts that fill up yours and my mailbox every day. How do you build trust with that age group?
You got to understand your avatar. If I was marketing to 30s and 40-year-olds, I would speak a completely different language. And that's what marketing is about. If I go out to my lake right in front of my house and I start throwing out bait, and if I start throwing out the wrong type of bait, I'm going to attract the wrong kind of species. And I don't want to do that. I'm trying to get tiger bass right here. So it's important to understand your client avatar. And again, you can go after the wrong client avatar. If you don't understand them, you don't appreciate them, you don't connect with them. I've always been an old soul. All my friends, when we were growing up, I was always at the parents' dinner table. That's always where I was. I was always an old soul having older conversations. I just didn't complain about my joint pain. I didn't have that in common with them. But I related to them. And I understood them. I understand where their values were, what their goals were. And you know that at such a deep level. You speak their language. It's like a dog whistle. People hear that because they know you understand them.
What's your method of communication? Is it email, phone calls?
I'd like to say that we're omnipresent for the retirement community here on the Gulf Coast. And so we have a radio show. We do live events where I speak to them. I have live events specifically designed to federal retirees, to state retirees. We have a good Google presence. If someone Googles us, we have 4 times more Google reviews than the next advisor. And we are very intentional about referrals and introductions to friends that may need our help too. So we're always just trying to compare. You had a great experience. You thought you had a financial advisor. Then you met us. And that was a different experience. And your friends should know about that.
You mentioned that you added to your due diligence list greatly. What are some of the key factors that you added?
Our due diligence, I've probably got at least 28, 30 questions. All of them are some of the typical ones you would see in any due diligence questionnaire. But some of the things that we have added alludes to what you were asking before. Tell me what has gone wrong. Tell me what's not gone well. Tell me what have you maybe not thought of in this deal. And then we're making sure that they've also got to a point of scale that makes sense for us to invest in. Again, if they've only raised $5 million, it's just too risky for us to write large checks to an institution that has no experience. If they've raised 50, 100, multiple hundreds of millions of dollars, sadly, I understand that's how do you get there without the other? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? I understand that. But when it comes to institutional money, you have to prove yourself. So I don't have the list in front of me. I wish I did. I'd tell you some of them. But we've continued to try to improve. And also we've went back to some of the due diligence questionnaires and said, all right, this one paused distributions. Is there anything that we noticed? And sadly, we didn't catch anything when we've looked back, but we're going to keep on trying to get a better due diligence process over time to eliminate those investments that don't work out.
Do you look at the personal financial sheet or statement for the actual syndicator as well? Look at their balance sheet?
We don't. I love the idea of doing that, though.
So we've been approached a lot by capital raisers who want to bring their investors' money into our deals. And we've never accepted capital that way. But I was shocked in that no one's ever asked me to do a background check. No one's ever looked at my balance sheet. And a lot of times, they don't even dive into the deal. They just want to know the returns and the rip that they can get on these deals.
We pay Justice Solutions Group mega money, in my opinion, for as many operators that we interview. And we're running through those operators through that third-party vendor to look for bad actors. And I've been shocked on some of the things that people sadly have a really bad background. I'm shocked that they're trying to raise money with financial crimes, things like that. It's like, wow, pretty scary. So we definitely want to look at that. I like the idea of adding it. I'm an open book. If a client asks me what my balance sheet is, I'm happy to share. If you take advice from someone, you're in essence trading places with them. So I always tell every client, be careful who you take advice from because you're trading places with them. That's what happens when you take advice from someone.
Yeah, I think looking at someone's balance sheet, as well as their liquidity, are they down to their last dollar? And just looking at their balance sheet, I think gives you a better big picture. Do they have $500,000 in cars, but no liquidity? A lot of toys, not a lot of investments.
Because when you need to sell them, they're not very liquid.
Yeah. What do you use for background checks? What was it that you mentioned?
Justice Solutions Group. We've interviewed a few firms, and I think that's the one we currently use.
And they do a comprehensive background check?
They do. And they do it for what I feel like cost? Is a fair price. Again, I don't run them, but I thought it was like, is it $1,500? Lucas says it's $1,500.
If a syndicator had done a background check themselves and presented it to you, would that fly or would you be worried?
Oh, I don't know if I'd be worried, but I would definitely still like to do my own. I think trust but verify. Reagan said it for a reason.
Yeah. I'm just curious if somebody can get ahead of the ball.
I think it should be a part of it. If I was a capital raiser, I would put that out there. Absolutely. When you're registered, my ADV part 2A and 2B is on our website. It tells you my speeding tickets and that I paid them and stuff. It tells you it's public knowledge. It's not if you're a capital raiser. So like I said earlier, if you operate like someone that is licensed, if you ever are potentially needing to be licensed, it's not going to be very hard for you. So I would say absolutely go ahead and do that. But I wouldn't be worried by any means if someone said, hey, here's a background check. If you want to check into that, if you want to do your own independent one, we recommend that. But here's mine. I think that's really nice. That adds a lot of credibility. Institutional money is going to require that.
Got it. What is your bottleneck today? Is it deals? Is it capital?
I wouldn't say it's capital. I would say that there are some deals. We want to be very careful. We also want to have the true diversification within our buy box. We don't want to be too heavy. So we constantly, every quarter, saying, are we too heavy in one state? Are we too heavy in one sector? Are we too heavy with one operator? I'm not going to give all of those funds to one operator, obviously. Even if they had the best of the deals, they're best in class, we have to have diversification. So the bottleneck is making sure that we have true diversification. So we would love to see some more properties in certain areas of the country that we're just not represented in. So that's one item for us. And then I need a couple more me's. Besides that, we'd be fine.
Have you ever been to the Best Ever Conference out west?
I heard so many good things. I wish I could say I've already been there and it's amazing. I just heard so many good things about it. And if it lined up with my calendar, I'd be there.
Yeah, look at going in the future because you will meet everybody from people that want to passively invest to syndicators, operators in every asset class there is. Great networking. I think you'd benefit a lot from meeting some of these operators.
Sounds like it. I've heard so many good testimonies about how great it was.
Yeah, and we get to hang out.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your best real estate investing advice ever?
Ooh, I would say that for someone that's a passive investor, I believe that you should have passive and active real estate. If you're a real estate investor, you need to prioritize having a blend of active and passive real estate. Passive real estate is fantastic. I'm glad Tim Cook doesn't ask me, what do you think about the new Vision Pro? I'm glad he's not asking me that. I'm hoping he's going to figure out all the issues. I love active real estate too, because I can use my creative ability, but it requires blood, sweat, and tears. So that would be my real estate advice to every business owner who hopefully looks at their capital raising business as a business is the title gives you everything you need to know, but the book's good too, is who, not how. You have to have who's in your business. So I want to know how's. I'm interested, but I need a who to carry it out. So making sure that you pick the right team. At Swan Capital, we have an amazing team, but that's not by just chance. We work really hard to find the best people, and the best people want to work with the best people. So find you a who.
Andrew, what's the hardest lesson you've learned in this industry, whether it's about friends, partners, investors, deals? What's one that just hit you in the gut pretty hard?
I'm going to allude to another book. The lesson I learned is I'm pretty hard-headed. So trial and error is not the best way to learn, but man, I've used that one a lot. Trial and error will really aid you over time, and you don't have to do that. You can take advice from other people. You can look at a mentor that's 5 years ahead of you that's already gone through the pain and suffering, and you can say, wow, I will shorten that gap. You can't eliminate. We try to do that for kids and nephews and nieces, to try to get rid of all difficulty for them. Well, that removes all gravity, and bones don't grow without gravity. So we have to have some pain and suffering, but we don't have to go through all the trial and error. So a book I would recommend to everybody is The Road Less Stupid. Keith Cunningham's book is just amazing. The Road Less Stupid is so good, because I know as simple as this is going to sound, and if you're not careful, because it's so simple, you'll miss it, is I never really thought about my business. No one ever taught me how to think. So I love the questions in The Road Less Stupid, because I actually can take a step back, start asking questions like, what am I not thinking about? What could derail our business? What would I do if I only could operate on referrals? And some of these questions that I've created my own questions now that I like to come back to and ask myself again. And when you build basically this repository, this big deposit of great questions that you can continually ask yourself from time to time as you mature in business, those are going to be valuable questions, because the answers you're going to get are so incredibly important to the next stage of growth in your business. So I would recommend those two books.
What is your approach when you're seeking a mentor?
Well, I think you have to be careful. Every time you pick a mentor, just like when you take advice from someone, you're trading places with them. Like, I'm not going to take marriage advice from someone that's been divorced 2 times. I'm not going to do it. I take advice from them about different things. So I want to be closed-minded. People say, you should be more open-minded. I say, well, that's the problem with this generation, is we're so open-minded, our brains fall out. I actually want to be closed-minded on some things. And I want to be open-minded to the mentors that can speak wisdom into my life. And I can tell you, I had someone that said, you should not do that project. You should not build that event venue on your property. And I was like, well, I really want to do it. They were right. I was wrong. And I should have listened to them, because I would have loved to trade places with them. They're worth $500 million. That's pretty cool. So they know something about business, and I should have listened. But just like Solomon tries to tell us in Ecclesiastes, is you could continue to test this out and do this experiment we called life, and you'll find out that it was unfulfilling. You'll find out that I was right. That's why the beauty of wisdom is so great, is you can try to hit your head against sheetrock, or you could just listen to the advice.
That very wealthy individual How did you get in front of them?
I think you got to pay people. People are busy. So there was a charity event and it offered a lunch with one of the richest people in our towns. And I was like, that's cheap. So I was the number one bidder at that silent auction. So I look for ways where I can pay people for their time. And I want to give experts their time and value their time, either by giving back to them in some way or actually literally paying them for it. And I think a lot of people that want to leapfrog should do the same. You need to understand that they don't have just a bunch of free time. They have a family of their own. So you either need to give back to them in some way or you need to pay them for their time.
Andrew, what's the best ever way you like to give back?
Well, I try to give in a diversified fashion. If someone reads my book, The Giving Crisis, or watches our YouTube channel, The Everyday Philanthropist, they know how important giving is to me. And people would think, well, you give away half the business profits. Obviously, you're going to save money. Well, not necessarily. I would say your time, your talent are also very equal. That's why we shut down the office 4 times a year and invite our clients to come volunteer their time to worthy charities. So I would say how I like to give back is my time, my treasure, my talent. So I try to use those three and I try to give in all three of those categories because it's almost too easy just to write a check sometimes. And you can say, I gave a check, I was a giver. And it's like, no, you got to give your time and your treasure, because if you do that, it's the trifecta of saying, I know what this charity is going through because I've spent time in it. And I know how I can give financially because I have time in it. And oh, I got these talents that I've been entrusted and I can use those too.
And Andrew, how can the best ever listeners reach out to you?
The first way is check out my book, therichyoungandpowerful.com/book. You can get my book with some extras. The book's called The Giving Crisis. It just shares my journey of being greedy to generous, from accruing over $10 million and giving all of it mostly away, which is an interesting story to go from greedy to generous. And then you can check out the Everyday Philanthropist channel on YouTube. And my wealth management firm's called Swan Capital, which is always easy to remember, sleepwellatnight-capital.com.
Andrew, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Happy to do it anytime.
Best ever listeners, thank you as well for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. Share this podcast with someone you think can benefit from it. Also, if you are in real estate, consider going to the Best Ever Conference. For 2024, I have a discount code. It will give you 15% off. The discount code is CONNECT, and that's what you're going to do at the Best Ever Conference. It is, in my opinion, the best networking I've ever been to. So thank you again for joining us. Have a great day.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and Best Ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the Best Ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.